Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as you have almost no doubt heard since late Thursday, two former campaign associates of the New York City comptroller and mayoral hopeful John Liu were convicted last week in federal court of an illegal straw donor scheme. They are Jenny Hu and Oliver Pan. And Mr. Pan's lawyer, Irwin Rockman, joins us as we all try to figure out what to think of Liu's candidacy in light of these verdicts. So, Mr. Rockman, thank you very much for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So on Friday's show, I was discussing this verdict with WNYC reporter Bridget Bergen, who was in the courtroom throughout the trial. We played a clip of tape of something you said to Bridget, and then I responded. And after the show, I'm just filling the listeners in on this, you called up to take issue with what I said and asked to come on, and we're delighted that you wanted to come on. So I want to play the exchange, and you can respond. This starts with a clip of you, Irwin Rockman, as Oliver Pan's attorney after the trial.
What the government has to prove in this case, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Mr. Pan's intention, that his purpose, his conscious objective, was to obtain matching funds, to defraud the city of New York's campaign finance board of matching funds. Merely to create straw donors is not, there's no fraud involved.
But I find that clip mystifying, I have to say, because why else would they create straw donors? Why not just have some deep-pocketed guy contribute $16,000 by himself? So that's a clip from Friday's show, and you call it to take issue with what I said. My underlying assumption was, since any mayoral campaign gets a lot of public matching funds, in fact, six times the initial small donation by a private person for each such small donation, why else would somebody execute a straw donor scheme, making it look like their big donation was a lot of many small donations, other than to get the public matching funds?
Well, I think had you been at the trial, obviously there's no reason you should have been, like Ms. Bergen, who did, a wonderful job, I think, given the amount of time she had in reporting accurately what happened. It doesn't change the result of the case, but in fact, during the course of the trial, various other purposes for creating straw donors were brought to light. For instance, in the government's own evidence, let's say there's a businessman who wants to curry favor with another businessman whose business he wants. The guy whose business he wants to give money to a political candidate. That political candidate has his own self-imposed rule. The maximum political contribution that can be made in a mayoral race is $4,950. The Liu campaign, let me make clear here, I don't represent John Liu. I'm not here speaking for John Liu. My client is Mr. Pan, and I'm concerned about some of the issues that I think the trial raised, but I'm going to respond to your question. So again, if the businessman wants to make a contribution to a political candidate, but that candidate has a self-imposed rule of $800, well below the minimum, and you have to meet that candidate's requirements. He's very rigid about enforcing that rule. So the businessman who wants to give the donation tells the people who want to curry favor with him, listen, you've got to come up with 10 people, $800 each. And let's say the second businessman goes to his employees and all of them say, what are you, crazy? I'm not giving this guy $800. And he then puts up the money himself. I'm not suggesting that's
right.
A laudable purpose.
Right.
I'm not suggesting it's lawful. I'm simply suggesting it's a purpose unrelated to obtaining matching funds.
So hypothetically, a business person could be trying to ingratiate himself with another business person for future business dealings through that scenario that you just laid out. But Oliver Pan was a fundraiser for John Liu. So what other motivation would he have had in helping with this or accepting the straw donor scheme from this supposed businessman, Richard Kong, who turned out to be an undercover agent.
Let me make clear. What I'm not here to do is try to appeal Mr. We'll argue the appeal with all due respect, and I hope you know that I'm a listener and an admirer of yours. But with all due respect, we'll argue the appeal. You know, there are serious legal issues I think that deserve consideration. My point was not that you had mistakenly labeled him guilty. My point was that simply that was a misunderstanding of the facts. And there are other purposes if you're interested in hearing them.
And I will be in just a minute. But to finish on this point, I think the point is that most of the listeners don't care about Oliver Pan one way or another. And he's you know, a human being, an American citizen. He deserves his day in court, including his appeal.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But what the listeners do care about is if a major mayoral hopeful and current controller conspired to break campaign finance laws, which he hasn't been accused of, but what is your and Mr. Pan's position on what John Liu knew and when he knew it about what was actually taking place between Mr. Pan and Mr. Kong?
Well, Mr. Pan's – I mean, that's really a matter of public record. Mr. Pan was agreed to cooperate and tell the truth. The government's idea of tell the truth is tell them what they want to hear. When Mr. Pan said that he couldn't be sure what was understood, and understand this. If Mr. Pan had information that I could have used, that he could have used to benefit him, to get him, put him in a better position.
By giving up John Liu?
It would have certainly been my obligation to explore that with him. I'm not going to discuss my conversations with my client, but that did not happen.
What was the other thing you wanted to say a minute ago?
Oh, the other purposes. For instance, let's say, and this is something I'm sure you're familiar with, when they announce when a campaign announces how much it's raised, when those deadlines come up, and they want to they're just short of $1 million, and they want to show they've raised $1 million, someone. May make some contributions, straw donor contributions, simply to increase the amount that the campaign can claim, again, without its the primary purpose or even the conscious purpose of raising matching funds. Let me make clear. I'm not here to argue against matching funds. I think matching funds are a wonderful political idea. I think that if they're maintained with integrity, it gives, you know, the voice of the people should be heard in the land, and it does that. All I'm talking about is my client and representing him and getting him a fair shake. And what concerns me most about this case, and I understand this is not the political issue that you're understandably concerned with, there is a serious question about to what extent the government should be allowed to engage in the substantial invasion of privacy, which is represented by turning an undercover person, FBI agent in this case, loose on someone when the government has no evidence prior to doing that, that person has committed a crime. That is a serious issue. It's raised directly by this case. Unfortunately, the law does not require any showing like that, unlike other substantial invasions of privacy.
But if you're claiming entrapment, in effect, is what you're saying, with no prior tendency to this kind of behavior, why would the government waste its resources on something like that unless, you know, the U.S. attorney had it in for John Liu for some reason, which would be a very serious charge, and I don't think there's any reason to think.
And I have no basis for making it, nor do I believe that there was some political motive here. But I think let me give you what may sound to you like a completely unrealistic and almost fantasy-like hypothetical. I think it actually comports with the day-to-day reality. Let's suppose there's a U.S. attorney, understandably ambitious, and he has some allegations about a big political fish. And he'd like to try to make a case against that fish if he can, not because he has a political vendetta or he's got a political axe to grind or he's somebody's hatchet man, but he wants to try to make a case. And he's at it for a couple of years, and he's unsuccessful. He's used wiretaps. He's used interviews. He gets no place. And then he learns about the existence of someone who's close to that person, but he has no real evidence that that person has done anything. But what he wants to do is try to make a case against that person for the purpose of squeezing him really hard with the threat of prosecution, and then in that way making that case. Mr. Pan, I'm sorry
go ahead,
to interrupt
Sal,
you.
Please.
And then that's why what I tried to say in court was that Mr. Pan essentially became collateral damage in this case, in the government's, what I've called the government's, I don't know how else to describe it, its obsessive pursuit of John Liu.
But to continue that line of thinking, wouldn't that be the U.S. attorney's job if he thinks that there is corruption on Liu's part to then go after it as hard as he can and through the back alleys of one of his fundraisers or one of his campaign officials, if that's the way to get at it?
The answer is there's nothing wrong with that as a motive. But what we're talking about here is the ultimate due process ethical issue in criminal prosecution. We're talking about ends and means. And yes, that's a laudable goal. It's a laudable goal. The question is, what's permissible in going about achieving that goal? And what I'm suggesting is, unlike, for instance, if the government wants a search warrant, it has to get prior judicial approval, and then that search warrant can be contested afterward. If the government wants the wiretap, it has to get prior judicial approval, and that order for the wiretaps can be challenged afterward. And in fact, the court, the prosecutor is required to make periodic reports to the court about the wiretaps. There is no similar protection. Again, I'm
Go ahead. You're making a procedural case. I understand.
I'm not suggesting that the government in this case did something that violated the law, because in fact they did not. The law permits the government to do exactly what they did. I'm saying that raises a serious question about whether they should be permitted to do that. I mean, today it's in pursuit to maintain the honesty and efficacy of campaign matching fund laws. But tomorrow it may be some political end. I mean, ends and means are always important. Laudable ends don't justify questionable means.
So before we run out of time, related to that, one of the key pieces of evidence in the trial was a tape of Mr. Pan with John Liu, in which Pan says about a fundraising event, this is Richard's event, referring to Richard Kong, who was supposed to be making the big donation being funneled through the straw donors. This is Richard's event. And, of course, we know that Richard was really this undercover agent. But in the closing arguments, prosecutors took that statement to mean that Pan told John Liu that this was a straw donor scheme and Mr. Kong was the guy actually giving all the money. This is Richard's event. Therefore, John Liu must have known exactly what was going on. Do you dispute that interpretation?
Again, I don't represent John Liu. I'm not here to dispute it and not dispute it. But as a more than casual observer, they didn't. Then they should indict him. Look what we have here. You had a segment, I believe, on Friday when I slept in after the verdict. I forget the gentleman's name. I think Stephen Nesson. About the impact in the Chinese-American community of these prosecutions and the absolutely chilling effect it's had on people participating, contributing. This is a cult. These people have from a different culture, that they're in the Fujianese community, recent immigrants. All they understand is you don't want to go near politics. You don't want to be contributing money because something bad may happen to you. I'm not suggesting that's a defense for my client. I'm suggesting that's a concern that the government should have had, and it's an important concern.
And I raised a question about that on
Friday's
show,
as you may have heard. I did.
So is it very unusual in your experience for a prosecutor to say in open court that somebody who has not been indicted, in this case Mr. Liu, must have been a co-conspirator in this case for which he was not indicted?
Why the government chose to do that, I don't know. And I have no basis for impugning the government's motive. It just seems to me if one should be very careful, particularly when you're talking about a political candidate. We're talking here about political speech. We're talking about infringing on important rights. I think the government was not as careful as it should have been.
Erwin Rockman is the attorney representing Oliver Pan, the fundraiser who was convicted on Thursday in connection with this straw donor scheme. Do you want to give us 20 seconds on your basis for appeal?
Again, I really didn't come here to complain about the verdict or to argue the appeal.
Right.
We'll deal with that. That's something I think is more appropriately dealt with in a court. But I thank you very much for the opportunity.
And I appreciate you talking about the underlying issues with us. Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll talk more about corruption in New York State coming up next. Another day, another New York State legislator under arrest. Okay, he's a former legislator. Ho-hum. And we'll look at the legislation in Albany, including what Governor Cuomo wants, to try to clean some of all of this up and why that's controversial. Stay with us.